The first report into the government's tax incentives for commercial research and development estimates an impact on New Zealand's GDP of nearly $7 billion. The incentives were brought in 5 years ago to encourage business innovation by offering a 15% tax credit on eligible R&D for firms, and it replaced an earlier grants scheme. The inquiry into the scheme's effectiveness was carried out by the public policy research entity Motu. It found that for every dollar of government spending, firms invested $1.40 in additional R&D. The report's lead author is Tadhg Ryan Charlton, who's in the Wellington studio with me. Kia ora, good morning.
Kia ora.
So are we talking about a dollar of government spending and then firms themselves putting in another $1.40? Is that what you're saying?
That's correct. That was our headline figure, was a dollar of government spend translated to $1.40 of additional R&D expenditure.
And is that $7 billion over the 5 years, the $7 billion estimate?
The $7 billion estimate, we're not talking about additional expenditure on research and development. There we're talking about the modelled impact on GDP and the economy as a whole.
Over the whole time or per annum? Over the whole time?
Over the whole time.
All right. Let's talk about what we're talking about, for starters. Which firms can access what kind of R&D support?
Of course. So the Research and Development Tax Incentive was introduced in April 2019. It's an economy-wide incentive to support eligible research and development expenditure. It lowered the threshold for research and development expenditure from 300,000 under the previous R&D growth grants regime to $50,000 in eligible annual expenditure under the RDTI, and in certain situations it could be lower still. So it made public support for business R&D more accessible. That was one of the core intents of the policy when it was introduced in 2019.
Research and development is defined as what?
Research and development is defined as in investments in new methods that will lead to innovation, lead to new products and services. From the perspective of the RDTI, it adopts a definition of research and development that's used commonly across the OECD. It's called the Frascati definition. And that emphasises research and development that uses a systematic method and that seeks to resolve some sort of technological uncertainty.
So it starts with the problem and works backwards rather than just evolving something you've already got, or can it be both?
It can be both.
Right. So let's talk about how you reach this figure. And I think the report, from looking at it, a mix of quantitative hard data and qualitative talking to these firms. How many firms did you talk to?
So the qualitative aspect of this evaluation was led by Professor Conor O'Kane at the University of Otago, and we worked closely together across about 8 months evaluating the scheme. Conor undertook 67 interviews with 84 participants, and 41 of those were businesses. So 41 interviews with businesses, and there was quite a bit of care taken to speak to businesses with varying levels of R&D expenditure, and also firms across different industries across the economy.
And how, again, do you reach a figure like $7 billion? Give us an idea of how you extrapolate from the hard data, the interviews, and then what you come up with in terms of additional benefit.
Of course. And I would say that figure, which was the midpoint in a range in terms of the impact on GDP, that was a result of our quantitative analysis and then subsequent modelling on top of that analysis. So we relied on Statistics New Zealand longitudinal business database, where we were able to use the confidentialised microdata uploaded by Inland Revenue. And we use that alongside a range of other microdata sources, such as the R&D survey, the business operations survey, and tax and financial data that allowed us to, I suppose, use objective sources of data to undertake an analysis of the trajectories of RDTI-supported firms and also a range of comparison firms.
Now, that's important. This isn't just that those firms spent more because they had government support on R&D. You're actually measuring the impact of that spend.
You're absolutely right in terms of we attempted to be as careful as we could, both in accounting for the likelihood that, that firms would select into this scheme, and making sure that we didn't confound that with the overall impact reported. So we used a range of econometric methods to attempt to, net out those factors, those observables that might affect both participation in schemes like this and also other factors that might increase R&D expenditure.
Were you asked to, and did you in fact compare results to the earlier grant scheme?
We did. We looked at the R&D growth grant scheme, in two ways. One, we did look at the 5-year window before the RDTI, so the years ending March 2015 and through to the years ending March 2019, and we assessed the impact of the R&D growth grant scheme during that period in terms of additional R&D expenditure, but also in terms of innovation and productivity. We also used those results with regard to the responsiveness of firms to R&D growth grants to attempt to model what would have happened had the R&D growth grant scheme continued for the subsequent 5 years.
Does the tax incentive reach a narrower group of companies than previously under the grant scheme?
I would say, Catherine, that in fact the opposite is true. Our findings, both the quantitative results and also the in-depth interviews with firms, would suggest that the RDTI has been more inclusive than the earlier R&D grants scheme. So in the first 5 years of the RDTI, about 1,750 firms received support. More than half of those, just over half of those, had not previously been supported by Callaghan Innovation, and just under half of those had R&D expenditure below the threshold that would have made them eligible for growth grants. So I would say the opposite is true there, Catherine.
You were asked by the Ministry of Business, Innovation and Employment, by EMB, to answer 5 questions. Did this overly focus your research or, you know, potentially affect the outcome, I guess, of the report?
I would say the questions were those that would have been sensible to look at anyway to attempt to understand not just the impact of the evaluation, but also how well it is working. Those questions, which are laid out at the outset of the report, are quite broad and gave us quite a lot of scope on autonomy to approach this as an independent piece of work, both quant and qual.
We spend our lives angsting about New Zealand's poor productivity growth and how that affects all of us, all the way through to pay packets. Our R&D spend, how does it shape up? Our private sector R&D spend in particular, how does it shape up compared to other similar countries?
I wouldn't say it's fantastic, to be honest, Catherine. So our figure, business expenditure on research and development in New Zealand is thereabouts 1% of GDP.
Okay.
The median in the OECD is around 2%.
So half. Okay, next question. The figure of 1,700 firms receiving support, that sounds quite small. I think there's about 500,000 private enterprises in New Zealand from memory. A lot of them small firms, of course, one-person firms. 1,700, that sounds small. Is it? Did you regard it as small?
Initially, at the outset of this work, I would say that I would maybe have had a similar reaction. I think as we got into this work and we began to understand the total addressable market for this type of R&D support, we did look at firms that reported doing R&D but were not supported by the RDTI. Much of this, I would say, would be ineligible for the RDTI. Some would be supported by other Callaghan Innovation grants. RDTI support accounts for about 65% of measured R&D in the economy.
You see,
that's
just what stops me in my tracks. Yeah. 1,700 firms, but 2/3 of the R&D expenditure in the economy is from the scheme. What does that say about private sector investment in R&D?
That says that a small number of very large R&D spending firms are contributing disproportionately to the overall business expenditure of R&D in New Zealand.
Do you have any suggestions from doing this work on what would improve willingness to do more R&D, whether state supported or otherwise?
I think there were a few areas where we identified opportunities for improvement, where public R&D would be more effective in perhaps reaching firms, particularly smaller R&D spending firms, who both in New Zealand and internationally, we know smaller spenders are more responsive to government support for R&D. One of the things that we identified through both the qualitative and quantitative research here is that the compliance costs associated with the RDTI, which are significant for businesses, they disproportionately affect smaller spenders.
Costs and just sheer admin capacity.
Precisely.
What were the hoops they had to go through? Remembering they are getting taxpayers' money, but what were the hoops they had to go through?
The documentation and record-keeping burden can be particularly significant for small firms engaging tax...
Is there not a straightforward kind of template that everyone can just get from MB?
No, they're not at this stage, not to the same degree as there would be in other countries, for example, Australia, where there's software for this type of process.
Speaking of software, are there particular businesses that are missing out for this from access to this tax incentive?
That's a good point. I'm glad you brought that up, Catherine. And similar to many schemes internationally, New Zealand employs an approach that's quite restrictive with regard to software R&D. Our report identified frustrations that were common across both businesses and administrators with regard to the treatment and the amount of time spent processing claims that involved software R&D. The two core issues were the ability or inability of software R&D firms to satisfy the criteria with regard to demonstrating technological uncertainty with their R&D, and also there was a feeling that R&D in software and in other areas was maybe more circular and incremental and didn't necessarily fit the mould of a more linear R&D development trajectory that maybe the scheme is more accommodating to.
So our SaaS firms, our software as a service firm, can they access this funding?
To my knowledge, it depends on the specific nature. I don't want to stray into the realms of giving out tax advice that I'm not qualified to do so. But to my knowledge, there would be certain aspects of their R&D activities that may be eligible.
What was your conclusion then on how it's working, how it could be improved that we haven't already covered off?
I would say our findings on most fronts were cautiously positive. While we did aggregate themes across the interviews, it is important to state that there were some firms that were deeply unhappy with their experience, and a lot of that was rooted in compliance costs. I would say one thing that arose that I would maybe like to emphasise is the importance of policy stability to generate sustained behavioural changes. I think the importance of stability with a view to business certainty, allowing businesses to make longer term investments in R&D, make longer term investments in New Zealand. That was something that came through quite strongly in the qualitative interviews. And that type of stability also allows businesses to build the systems and the processes necessary to navigate compliance costs and to minimise compliance costs over time.
Thank you. That is Tighe Ryan-Charlton, who is with Motu Research. They have done this research into the results from the government's R&D tax credit, 15% tax credit on eligible R&D, which has replaced an earlier grants scheme.